Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news. You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
It's already been a very busy, very newsy day, even though Congress is out of session and we are now on day 13 of the government shutdown. It's geopolitics taking hold, of course, with the president's journey to Israel. The release of the hostages that did take place today on a remarkable and historic day here in the Middle East. The president speaking with world leaders to declare the war in Gaza is over. That part may have yet to be confirmed, with big questions about the 20-point plan now as we move into phase two of that plan. Today, though, was about good feelings and, of course, reuniting the hostages with their families. President Trump spoke a bit earlier. We took this live on Bloomberg. Listen.
This is the day that people across the region and around the world have been working, striving, hoping and praying for. They have done things over the last month that I think were really unthinkable. Nobody thought this could happen. With the historic agreement we've just signed, those prayers of millions have finally been answered.
Helping us cover this remarkable day live from Jerusalem is Bloomberg Europe correspondent Oliver Crook, and he's back with us now. This journey, Oliver, is over. It was not even a full day for President Trump. But of course, the feelings in Israel remain with great optimism going forward. What are you hearing on the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Joe, actually, what I'm hearing right now is a sound of prayer and chanting in the streets of Jerusalem at the end of the Jewish holiday here. And this is, I don't know if you can hear it behind me, but, you know, coming very fortuitously at the end of what has been a more than 2-year process here in the beginning of the war on October the 7th. And as you say, Joe, I mean, this day began with 20 hostages still in Hamas custody. Throughout the course of the day, they came back. They've been repatriated to Israel. They've been reunited with their loved ones. At the very same time after that began happening, there began the release of more than 1,000 Palestinian prisoners that had been taken over the last 2 years, but some that were also convicted for a great many crimes. And this was one of the more bitter pills that the Israelis had to swallow, was the release of 250 of these criminals back into population, which is, of course, what happened with Mr. Sinwar, the former head of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar. He had once been a prisoner. He had been released, and then he was the architect of that October 7th. So that comes with some of the fraughtness behind the scenes in what is otherwise a very sort of joyous day here in Israel. And of course, the sort of second phase of this, the second chapter of this, began just as you saw with the President of the United States really assembling all of these world leaders together to try to have discussions about the very difficult next steps, which have to do everything with the security protocol that will be in Gaza in the months to come, how to stabilize that, what the sort of status of Hamas is, their willingness to disarm, their willingness to potentially surrender. Part of the 20-point plan is that amnesty would be granted to them. And of course, then establishing that governing structure to try to get stability. And of course, the big question of how do you rebuild a territory that has been so fundamentally decimated? These are going to be the topics that will be, discussed for the coming months. And of course, the key partnerships will be there with all of those leaders we just saw. We should say that there were really four leaders that were put into prominence that got my attention there, and really four flags that really were flying in that big signing room. It was Turkey, it was Qatar, it was the United States, and it was Egypt. I think that really the significant player that came a little bit out of the dark was Turkey here, with President Erdogan playing a massive role in exerting some of that pressure that was required on Hamas to bring them to the table and bring this peace agreement to conclusion.
Interesting. Just quickly, Oliver, because we're going to be posing a number of these questions to Hagar Shamali in our Washington studio in just a moment. I want to ask you about the remains of hostages. Those living hostages have been freed, but of the 28 remaining, 26 are reportedly dead, the fate of two others unknown. Hamas had said that they were unable to find them all by the 72-hour deadline because of the destruction in Gaza. What will happen from here with the rest of these hostages and remains being returned to families?
So that will be an ongoing process to try to locate the remains. I think that there was some understanding, obviously, on the Israeli side, which is why this was not going to cause a sort of fatal blow to this peace agreement. But, you know, there are some questions about, you know, where the remains of these hostages are, because they're, of course, being held also by people that potentially Hamas can no longer get access to. Potentially they were in a structure that collapsed or that sort of thing. So I think the process for trying to locate the remains of many of these hostages is going to be ongoing, but wasn't going to be enough to sort of torpedo this entire undertaking that came into being over the last couple of weeks.
Oliver Crook putting in a long day for us. Oliver, thank you. Bloomberg Europe correspondent live in Jerusalem. As we add the voice of the aforementioned Hagar Shamali, former director for Syria and Lebanon on the National Security Council, CEO, founder of Greenwich Media Strategies, who has been a very important voice in our coverage since the attacks that took place on October 7th. Hagar, it's great to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you. I appreciate
that, Joe. I'm so glad that you're with us of all days. I don't even want to start with a question for you other than, what are you thinking right now?
Oh my gosh, I'm overjoyed. I feel a sense of relief. And I feel a sense of, by the way, immense pride to see the United States and President Trump really be the leader in brokering this deal. That's the role the United States often plays in bringing an end to war. I do believe that this is an end to the war. Might not necessarily mean an end to conflict sometimes, but it's a significant step. Seeing those hostages being released and reunited with their families is just gives me goosebumps.
Remarkable. Well, your energy is contagious. So from here, how do the parties who we just saw celebrating this moment make this a lasting peace? How do you get through the second phase?
Sure. You know, it's I don't want to underestimate the importance of having all of those leaders that we saw standing behind President Trump. And it's not just regional leaders. You had leaders from around the world. You even had the UN Secretary General, who President Trump has attacked numerous times.
That's right.
Everybody coming together for this. And that speaks volumes. But also the fact is that there were a lot of factors here that brought us to this day in a way that none of us could have foreseen. And what I mean by that first and foremost is you have Trump himself, who really pursues this peace through strength effort and this approach. And you see that, for example, when he gave a threat to Hamas, he said that basically this was the last time I'm going to do this. If you don't agree to this, I am going to allow Israel to eliminate you once and for all, a threat that Hamas took very credibly. At the same time, he was able to have to exert this immense amount of pressure on Netanyahu, especially following the strike on Qatar, which ended up being a tactical error on the part of Israel. Yeah. And so that also allowed him to do that. So when you have that pressure that he was able to exert on both, and then bringing in all these partners where Qatar and Turkey have to now bring, you know, they have to live up to their end of the bargain and continue the pressure on Hamas. All of that is going to bring to bear the fruit of this deal and hopefully the progress we're going to see throughout the negotiations.
It's really interesting reporting by Axios that this came together in a meeting last Wednesday with Witkoff and Jared Kushner, who sat down with officials from Hamas, at least the political officials who were targeted in that attack in Qatar, to address a question. Once the hostages are released, what says Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't continue to bomb and shell Gaza, continue the fighting? It took Kushner and Witkoff to say on behalf of the president that we assure you that will not happen. In the end, is Jared Kushner the person we should thank for this moment?
Well, Jared definitely played a significant role, that's for sure. And I can tell you, through my experience in government and also now, the value of outside players
can be very significant.
Yes. And because when you play a role in track two efforts, for example, often it's called track two or track 1.5, where you've got people on the outside who support a government's peace efforts, the beauty of those individuals is that they often have they have a lot more freedom of what they can do, what they can say, how they can travel. They can do it under the radar. And then all of a sudden at the end, they appear. And so I without a doubt, from everybody I speak to and everything I know, he played a very heavy role in pushing this deal across the finish line. Mm-hmm. He obviously has a lot of relationships and contacts in the Middle East. He remains through his businesses and so on. But again, that pressure, it takes pressure on both sides, and it always does. And it takes very determined and stubborn leadership.
Yeah.
And that you have coming from President Trump himself.
What happens to Benjamin Netanyahu? Noteworthy, he did not go to Egypt, by the way. And of course, I realize the timing, and he would have been flying back at night with the holiday. This was an issue for him, presuming he would have gone otherwise. But that said, it's been suggested that his political career could now be over now that the war has ended. Is that correct?
It's too early to say, to be honest with you, because they're, you know, we have to see how things are going on on the ground, because Israelis, a majority of Israelis, are very upset at Netanyahu. You know, Trump last week tried to say, oh, Netanyahu, you know, over a call, apparently he said, and now everybody can like you again. And now, you know, this is something for you as well.
Yeah.
And he was saying that because Trump and the United States in general, regardless of administration, believes very deeply in Israel and its long-term security. I don't know so much. I don't know that the majority of Israelis are going to be so quick to forget that they had to turn to Trump to help them on hostages. Wow, so that was something a big shift we saw happen this year. So it could be over, but it's too soon to say, because he's had a remarkable 20 years where he's been able to coalesce coalitions.
He's a survivor.
Yes, but you do see other leaders in the right wing, people like Naftali Bennett and others trying to make their way. I mean, Netanyahu's not going to be there forever, that's for sure.
Well, and they had the president of the United States today during a news conference suggest to President Herzog that Netanyahu be pardoned. I don't know if that's ever happened with a president on foreign soil making a remark like that, but we don't think that's going to happen, do we?
No, I wouldn't. I don't think that, you know.
He's facing a serious investigation still.
He faces very serious corruption investigations. And if he weren't in public office, he'd be sitting in a courtroom right now in some kind of trial. Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of that was, all of it was put on hold because of his return to office. So he's definitely been motivated by that in terms of his own decision making. But again, but the request for a pardon, while that is not typical of a U.S. president to make in foreign land, it's also not surprising at this point.
No, really nothing is it?
Yes, of what we've become used to.
Could you have imagined this day to begin with everything we just saw? You've got Keir Starmer standing behind him, Emmanuel Macron's walking around. Just the optics here is the president's riffing at the mic like he's at a Dean Martin roast or something. It's just absolutely not what anyone had envisioned.
No, well, and don't forget, the Europeans just recognized the Palestinian state.
That's
much
correct,
to the
at the UN,
the
just
States.
Weeks ago.
Yes, and the U.S. was not happy about it. And now you've got those leaders behind Trump, and that's
incredible,
because they can all get together behind this.
Rebuilding, Oliver mentioned this. The idea of rebuilding Gaza is daunting. It's rubble. It looks like the surface of the moon, as we have suggested. How do you do that without removing all of this rubble? Do you build on top of it? Can you rebuild Gaza without moving millions of people at a time?
Well, so listen, you know, I hope I don't sound desensitized to war, because I've worked on a lot of wars, but this kind of rubble is not new. If you look at Syria, if you look at Sudan, if you look at Eastern Congo, I mean, this is an unfortunate part of war.
So what's the playbook?
Well, it's also not new to have reconstruction.
Yes.
That rubble is pushed to the side. Sometimes the rubble, by the way, is used for other way. Maybe, for example, to build a pier.
Okay.
There are many ways. You saw it in Lebanon, for example, after the war. A lot of the rubble was eventually moved, used to build other things. And then some things were restored. It just depended on the building. It depended on the item. Yes, people, the fact is that most of the Gazan population is already displaced. The ideal is to have them in a situation where they're not intense, you know, in something that's so miserable and such a nightmare, something that is a bit sturdier while the rest of it is reconstructed. But that is common. It is, and it is going to happen.
Should the World Food Program and other providers have unfettered access to Gaza now? How do you get the food and the gas to where it's going?
It can never be unfettered, unfortunately. Okay. And the reason for that is because you still have the threat of Hamas and other gangs that could loot or take advantage of that aid. Or they could either steal it for themselves, hide it. They could sell it at inflated prices, unfortunately. And you also have to make sure that weapons and such aren't being smuggled in the middle of a truck. That's not uncommon, unfortunately, in situations like this.
Wow.
So it can't be unfettered. But that said, when you don't have an active war zone, a lot more can go in at a rapid pace.
Okay, fascinating. Fascinating. What's next for the president once he comes home? We've had a sort of celebration day today, and this is remarkable to witness all of it. But the business really kicks in tomorrow with keeping this intact. Will the president be involved on a daily basis, or is there a Hagar Shamali in this White House who's going to have this portfolio working with the Secretary of State? How is it maintained from here?
So I like that you mentioned that.
Funny. It happened already.
So there are two things I would say to that. So the first is yes, you are right. The real business, they are going to roll up their sleeves, and the real business takes place to achieve the future phases of this deal. And it's really where they're going to get into the hardest part of these questions. For example, who governs Gaza and how? How do we fashion that entity? Who's part of that entity? entity and who decides what that entity is made up of. The disarmament of Hamas. This is the biggest sticking point. This is the one that Hamas has been the most vague about. Yeah. And I don't mean to be naive. I absolutely expect that if Hamas agrees to the future phases of this deal, that they will try to work around it and still rearm. Okay. But that doesn't mean that it needs to be a return to war. When you have situations like that in the Middle East, and you've had other ceasefires that are similar, Lebanon is a good example of that, Israel responds with precision strikes, with counterinsurgency operations, and yet ceasefires still hold. Wow. So I don't see, there's a real reason to believe that we don't have to return to the war is what I want to say. So they're going to work on the nitty gritty of all those phases. Steve Witkoff and team are going to be very busy over the next few months.
Right.
So that's that piece. On the other piece, though, because you asked, you know, what's next? Yeah. Apparently, President Zelensky is coming to the White House on Friday.
Well, my gosh.
So
yes.
That's next a whole deal, other I guess.
Indeed. With regard to Israel, though. Last question. Is it possible for the IDF to dismantle the rest of the tunnel network without breaking the ceasefire?
Sure. Well, yes. And again, look at Lebanon as a good example of this. Lebanon and Israel have had a ceasefire since November. You had an escalation. They ended in a ceasefire and it has held until now. That said, Israel continues its strikes in Lebanon. And you don't hear about it in the press every day, but it's happening often. They are very precise, very targeted against missile arsenals and against Hezbollah leadership or commanders or operators. That's the best case realistic scenario that you could see here, where there's still going to be efforts to ensure that Hamas doesn't move weapons, get more weapons, build out a tunnel network. Now Israel can, with intelligence and so on, they can see that. And don't get me wrong, each side is still going to use points of leverage that they have to try and make the other side blink or move first. For example, Hamas still has the deceased hostages. Israel is not withdrawing all the way. For the first phase, it's something like 50 or 53% of the way. So there are still these points of leverage that each side have that are going to have to be used to get all the way there.
Got it. I'm so glad you could come in today. Hagar Shamali with the seminar, as always, on this day the hostages are released. What a remarkable moment to share with you. Greenwich Media Strategies has a lot of experience in this field. As you know, you've heard from Hagar a lot. Former director, Syria Lebanon, the National Security Council at the White House. Many thanks to Hagar Shamali. As we'll look back on this day as one of significance, the question is what happens from here, as we've been discussing. And we want to bring in our political panel with their thoughts on that. Bloomberg Politics contributors Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano are with us. Rick is our Republican strategist and partner at Stone Court Capital. And Jeannie, of course, Democracy and Visiting Fellow at Harvard Kennedy School's Ash Center. Why don't you pick up the conversation from here, Jeannie, because the idea of maintenance, the idea of the business that must be done after the cameras turn away and Air Force One is back here in Washington will be a very complex series of challenges. Is this administration up to it?
It will. I mean, it's going to depend on how engaged they are going forward. And certainly we know the administration has a lot on their hands and on the table domestically as well. And of course, as you just mentioned, they've also got this war in Ukraine and a meeting with Zelensky on Friday. But that I think we heard, right before the president spoke, when we heard from the president of Egypt, Sisi, he said something about closing a painful chapter in human history, certainly true, and a commitment to a two-state solution for the Palestinian and Israeli people. And I underscore that because he said that right before President Trump got up to speak. And that is something that we have heard, that the Israeli government, as it is now put together and as it is now obviously facing elections, so it could change, they have firmly rejected that notion from the start of this war. So I think as we think about what's going to happen going forward, we have to remember how far apart these two people and groups are. And it is not just Hamas and the Israeli government. It is also the Arab nations that have joined together with the president in terms of finding a way forward in peace. And so there is a long way to go here. I share Hagar's great excitement for the day, but I also think we need to be very cautious. The president is taking a victory lap. He deserves it. But there is a long way to go here when you hear the main partner, the president of Egypt, talk about a two-state solution.
Well, that's really interesting, Jeannie. Rick, I asked Hagar as well about Benjamin Netanyahu's political future. Once we're into phase two, assuming that this ceasefire continues, what will be his political reality at home?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting that President Trump turned to the president of Israel and said, "Hey, how about a pardon for this guy? He knows something about pardons." But I do think that that is a significant distraction to the rebuilding of Gaza and to the completion of the peace agreement. In other words, good news: war's over, killing will stop. By and large, and Israel will be able to return to some level of normalcy. They won't be sitting in air raid shelters all night long. And knowing the Israeli people, they're going to want to talk politics. They're going to want to find out what's the future of Israel. And as I looked at the coverage of the president's speech to the Knesset, you could see a dozen potential candidates for prime minister sitting around applauding, you know, because this actually unleashes a new era of Israeli life, which is a return to the hyper-political interests of the people there and a post-Netanyahu future. I don't think anybody really believes that after this, there's a role for Bibi Netanyahu as a future leader of Israel post this agreement. That he'll get credit for this agreement, he'll get credit for security, but at this point, they'll be looking across for new leadership.
Is that how you see it, Jeannie? In lieu of a pardon, what could be next for Benjamin Netanyahu?
Yeah, that was quite a moment when the President Trump said that today about why don't you pardon this guy? And the look on Benjamin Netanyahu's face was priceless. I think that Benjamin Netanyahu is facing, and we've always known he was facing, very serious challenges at home. I mean, look, before October 7th, the large-scale demonstrations on the street in Israel. After October 7th, the focus was on, you know, retribution, getting the hostages back. There's a lot of anger in Israel, understandably so, that the feeling that Benjamin Netanyahu could have made this deal long before and did not do that. And the polls are reflecting that. That said, Benjamin Netanyahu, who describes himself, I think rightly so, as maybe the most liberal member of this coalition, and he's a conservative guy, I think speaks volumes about how divided the Israeli government and the Israeli people are. And I think his future depends an awful lot on what we see happen in Gaza and in the West Bank. Again, I go back to the fact Israel had committed to getting the hostages back. That is now done. But to destroying Hamas and absolutely a commitment to no Palestinian state. The president, Egypt, others are suggesting otherwise on those last two fronts. And Hamas already active on the streets of Gaza City. So that is going to put a whole new level of concern there. How do you get a political and a security force in there that can keep us moving forward to the phase two? That is really going to be a challenge. And if Benjamin Netanyahu is able to maintain his position going forward, it's likely going to be because they are once again at war with Hamas.
Fascinating conversation with Jeannie Shanzano and Rick Davis. I want to thank you both for staying for a little bit of overtime here. We wanted to hear the president speak and get some time for all of the dust to settle here, capping a very brief trip to the region. Israel and Egypt back in his own bed this evening in the White House. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.